Who then to follow Francis as cardinals converge on Rome from the four corners of the earth? We'll ask whether the faithful want a pope who's a reformer or a traditionalist. With an increasing share of the planet's 1.4 billion Catholics from the global south, it's a choice of a spiritual leader and a choice of values in a changing world. Francis' successor will have to choose. Should women be ordained as priests? What rules on celibacy within the clergy? Should the next pope extend or halt outreach to gays, asylum seekers, and other outcasts as Francis did? The conclave that will follow the public funeral of Francis on Saturday will be shrouded in all the mystery of closed-door dealings. In the mix, bitter disputes over spiritual doctrine, the earthly reality of a church dogged by sex scandals and debt. And yet, if he's the right choice, the election of a leader who can prove a powerful moral voice, a bridge builder in a world that's more than ever in desperate need of one. Today in the France 24 debate, what path for the next pope? With us from St. Peter's Square, correspondent Seema Gupta is with us. Thanks for joining. From
Great
Worcester, Massachusetts, Joanne Pierce, professor emerita at the Department of Religious Studies of the College of Holy Cross. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
From Canterbury, England, Edward Penton, senior Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Register newspaper. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Vivian Walt, Paris correspondent for Time magazine. How are you?
Very good.
And we welcome back commentator and business consultant Edouard Tétrault, whose books in French include Beyond the Money Wall, Reflections on Pope Francis' Attack on Unbridled Capitalism. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
On the go, you can always listen to the show. That's right, listen to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. After his death on Easter Monday, the preparations already in full swing for Saturday and that funeral of Pope Francis. Siobhan Silk has more.
Dressed in red vestments, rosary beads entwined around his hands, the late Pope Francis has begun his final journey. On Wednesday, his remains will be taken to St. Peter's Basilica. Amid its opulence, Francis will lie in repose in his plain wooden casket as mourners file past to pay their respects. The funeral mass will take place on Saturday, attended by members of the church hierarchy, representatives of other faiths and world leaders. Traditionally, popes are buried in the crypt of St. Peter's, but Francis asked to be interred outside the Vatican at the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore, a place where he regularly prayed. His final resting place will be as modest as his coffin. In his will, Francis requested a humble, undecorated grave with a simple inscription, Franciscus, his name in Latin. Then will come the search for his successor. The papal conclave that will elect the new pope must begin within 20 days of Francis's death. 252 cardinals will gather in the Sistine Chapel. Only those under the age of 80 are eligible to vote, 135 of them. In theory, any Catholic man can be elected pope. In practice, he's selected from among the cardinals. The debate and vote take place in great secrecy. A two-thirds majority is required for the election of the new pontiff. If after 33 rounds of voting there is still no decision, there will be a runoff to select the pope from the top two candidates. The world will know when a decision has been made when the famous white smoke billows from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel. Then comes the verbal announcement.
Habemus Papa.
We have a pope. The new leader of the Catholic Church will appear on the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica to greet the faithful, and a new papal era will begin.
And that's still some 2 weeks away at least. Let me begin, Seema Gupta, by just pointing out something we saw in that report. First time in more than a century that a pope will be buried outside of the Vatican.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very clear that this papal basilica, there are four papal basilicas here in Rome, and it's very clear that this one was very dear to the heart of Pope Francis. It was where he went to immediately after he was elected in 2013, very soon after, and it's some place that he visited both before and after every single papal trip that he made, and even after he was discharged from hospital after spending 5 weeks there. Earlier this year, dealing with double pneumonia. And that's because there's the icon of Mary there. It's something that it's very close to his heart. It's a place that he clearly feels a commune with. And so the decision was made to be buried there. As you put it, something so rare that's not been seen for over 100 years. But it was his choice. And these four basilicas, papal basilicas of Rome, are where the pilgrims in this Jubilee year. Let's not forget, this is the holy year. It is the time that they go to visit all those four basilicas. And so already we've seen an increase in the number of people dropping by to St. Mary Major Basilica because they want to see why he has chosen this particular place.
The Church of the Basilica of St. Mary Major. Let me ask you about this, Joanne Pierce, because it's got this icon of Salus Populi Romani. I hope I'm saying it right. Joanne Pierce, this is something that's important to the Pope, and it's important to the Jesuit that he was.
Yes, the Jesuits are an interesting religious order. They were founded really in the 16th century, and they were founded particularly to obey the Pope. They were considered to be through their own provincials and generals, they were under the authority of the Pope. And as such, to be sent out as missionaries and as teachers across the world. So that really accounts a great deal, I think, for part of Pope Francis's worldview. That is the idea of teaching and the idea of being attentive to the needs of the wider world.
And so this decision to be buried in the Church of St. Mary Major, is it also a message in a sense to the wider Catholicism?
Well, it is. I mean, the title of the icon basically says talks about salvation of all the people. That's been very much a part of Francis's style, Francis's not just a put-on style, but a deeply heartfelt way of living in the world and of ministering to the entire body of the Catholic Church, person by person, valued each in and of him or herself. Very important.
Edward Penton, your thoughts on the funeral arrangements?
Yes, well, it's very much in keeping with Pope Francis. He wanted a simpler pontificate. He did away with a lot of the trappings of the papacy, and you're seeing that with the funeral too. It's going to be much less ornate, and much simpler and less ceremonial. Although there will be a procession or a translation of the body and the coffin from St. Peter's Basilica to St. Mary Major, which could be quite a spectacle. That's something that hasn't been done, as you say, for a long time, because the popes are usually buried in St. Peter's Basilica. So it'll be in some ways very much in keeping with Pope Francis' pontificate, I think.
And this is happening in a Jubilee year where there are these special holy doors, and this basilica is one of them that has these doors. Explain that.
Yes, well, the doors, it's very much a tradition during the Jubilee that each of these basilicas have a Jubilee door. And to go through it, you receive graces through going through the doors. The Jubilee is a time to really recover the faith, return to the faith. That's why they happen every 25 years. And so, yes, it's very significant too that he died during a Jubilee year, and we'll, you know, hopefully there'll be graces for him for that.
So, Vivian Walt, the way the funeral is arranged, first time in more than a century, a pope is buried outside of the Vatican walls, simpler coffin. Again, will this somehow weigh on the choice that will be made behind closed doors afterwards in that conclave?
Well, I'm curious to hear what those who have spent more time than I have, you know, studying the ways of the Vatican. It seems to me it would be difficult for them to go back to a time of pomp and ceremony and much more ornate trappings. It's one thing to break the mold, but once you've broken it, it's very difficult to reverse that. It begins to seem way more glaring to the public than it did perhaps before. And I think that's definitely going to be one thing that you might see continue.
Edouard Tétrault?
Yes, I think Vivian is very right. It will be extremely difficult or daring to the next courier to go back to the pomp. Presumably Pope Francis has set some new standards that that will remain for the better. One thing is what we, as Catholics, what we can wish for is, in a world that starts to be less and less human, with humanity puts on its periphery, with artificial intelligence, etc., to have a pope that is as human as Pope Francis was. Will probably be one of the objectives of the conclave. If I may convey just a personal souvenir, when I the last time I met Pope Francis was when I accompanied Emmanuel Macron for his first visit to Pope Francis in 2018, and to each of us who accompanied the president, saying, "Je te demande de prier pour moi." I ask you to pray for me. when the Pope, when the head of a church says, please pray for me, first you think, isn't it your job to pray for us? And then you realize how difficult, challenging his mission was, is, and how human he was. So, and we do hope that this standard of humanity remains with the next pope.
So this "who am I to judge" that he had famously stated when it came to homosexuality, that's a variant on it that you heard that day, and it's what? Is the message that the pope is just another man?
No, it is... No, he's not just another man, but it is a degree of humility that obviously strikes you. I ask you to pray for me. It almost compares with le lavement des pieds.
The washing of the feet.
Yeah, the washing of the feet, reversing the role. It also says, in a very subtle way, I may be, as a pope, the head of this church, but you are, each of you is a stone that is a part of the church. So each of you has to do his or her part. It's very engaging. It's very Jesuit in a way.
Edward Penton, picking up on Vivian Walt's point, listening to what Edouard just said, will that be rolled back, or is that now the way we'll see popes acting in the future?
Well, I think she's absolutely right, your guest. Yes, I think because it is very difficult to turn the clock back in that sense. On the other hand, though, I think there is a sort of a bedrock of opinion which is growing, I think, especially among the young Catholics, which wants to see more ceremonial, more tradition. And I think one of the criticisms, I think, of Pope Francis because of this, and I think a lot of people respect him for it, but at the same time, there were criticisms of it. And I think it was to do with the fact that by doing away with the trappings of the office, you're trying to associate the office with himself as a person, whereas there's a distinction between the office and the person of the Pope. And I think by doing away with the trappings, you're kind of diminishing the supernatural elements of the office, which are, of course, about God, not about man. And so I think there's a certain movement to get back to that, because it by doing so, it sort of raises the spirit to God rather than bring it down to a very human level. And that's I think that's probably what we might see going forward in the coming years.
Joanne Pierce, you agree?
Not entirely, no. I think the washing of the feet is a great example of servant leadership. Jesus Christ, after all, as Catholics believe, is truly the Son of God, but also a true human being, born within human time and within a human culture. The idea of servant leadership actually comes from this desire to be an authentic follower of Christ. And those in leadership positions in the church, like the Pope, I think they do well to consider their leadership role in a way that stresses humility, listening to the people, and attempting to serve them in the same way as they attempt to teach and attempt to guide. I don't think that that takes anything away from the transcendent dimension of Christianity, but we are straying over into one of the more contentious areas, and that is the liturgy of the church, the post-Vatican II reforms of the Catholic Mass and the Catholic sacraments.
And Vivian Walt, this is, of course, a question we ask of all world leaders, right? How much should they personify the state?
Yes, and of course, this is going to be one of those moments that brings all those world leaders together. Some notable ones, were totally at odds with the Pope. President Trump being the obvious example, Javier Milei being the other obvious example, the president of Pope Francis's home country. This notion that Joanne was talking about very much taps into the question of what the Pope had to say about this sort of outsized capitalist world that we're living in.
I want to get to that point. First, though, I want to just ask about Saturday for a second with our correspondent, Sima Gupta, because the last time a sitting Pope died was 2002. Dozens of world leaders came to the funeral, including the then U.S. president, was George Herbert Walker Bush. This time around, Donald Trump, among the first to state, he'll be traveling for Saturday's ceremony. You heard Edward say, even though there is this sort of nod to humility with this burial that's going to take place in the Church of St. Mary Major, there's going to be a procession, and there's going to be the pomp of all those world leaders on Saturday.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of interactions happen. I mean, at the last papal funeral of a sitting pope, there was a very significant group of people as well, as you mentioned, and not everybody seeing eye to eye, not a lot of on the same page on Pope Francis. Mr. Trump, for instance, and his administration having clashed with Pope Francis and Vatican officials, particularly on the issue of migrants and their crackdown on migrants and their push towards deportation. Now, that was something very clear that Pope Francis was not in favor of. He believed anyone that was fleeing persecution or poverty should be cared for. That's part of what is human dignity. So they should be looked after. And in fact, the Catholic Bishops' Conference in the United States clearly upset about the cuts that the Trump administration made to foreign aid as well as to domestic welfare programs because it had an impact on their programs helping refugees and migrants. So clearly a big clash in terms of their view on that. The Pope Francis was ever the diplomat and would always keep the channels of communication open, even with people he may have disagreed with.
Duarte, where will the limelight be on Saturday?
Sorry.
Where will the spotlight be on Saturday?
Obviously, I don't want to say that Donald Trump is the natural nemesis of what Pope Francis embodied. But obviously, it will be interesting to see how he interacts with other leaders, because he's currently a leader that is trying to shatter the world order, in trying to turn his back and the back of his country against many things that Pope Francis was speaking for. So obviously we'll have a spotlight there. Pope Francis has not always been very kind or tender with European leaders. He, in many ways, he not discarded, but he looked at European traditional Catholic countries, such as France, notably, but also Spain, as a secondary subject to him. What was important to him was Asia, Africa, even...
places where Catholicism is growing.
Places where, yes, and obviously Muslim countries. China was big on his agenda. So it will be interesting to see how Europeans are put in the protocol. And obviously, but I guess we'll jump onto that, the succession, we'll probably see a comeback of the European element in the Vatican.
Edward Penton, how do you see Saturday unfolding?
Yes, well, it will be interesting to see all of the world leaders there, too, paying their respects. I think it is a testimony to Francis's global outreach. I think he was considered to be very much in favor of sort of multilateralism and peace negotiations. The name Pontifex, of course, is the old Latin name for bridge builder, and he wanted to be very much that. I think he actually had quite a few successes in some ways, in others not. I mean, he did send out peace envoy Cardinal Zuppi, who went to Kiev, Moscow, and to Jerusalem, I think. And so I think yes, it'll be a testimony to that witness I think he had on the world stage to try to bring peace. There were problems, though, with that. I think people criticized him for getting too close to worldly powers, and that also caused problems and damage, I think, within the church. But that's another observation. But he certainly did try his best to bring peace to the world, and I think it'll be one of his lasting legacies, yeah.
And Joanne Pierce, again, will we be looking at it again through the prism of we will be scrutinizing, of course, those world leaders at that time. What will Pope Francis's impact have been when you see those world leaders together? Donald Trump on the one hand, Europeans who are wary these days on the other, for instance.
Well, one would hope that at the funeral of Pope, a bishop, a priest who advocated an end to violence and who advocated the valuing of every individual human being in the world as valuable and to be served and protected, I would hope that the disagreements and the tensions would be put to one side. This is not the time for any kind of political grandstanding. It's not the time for frictions to be expressed either implicitly or explicitly. This is a time for all to come together, everyone who has valued the role of the papacy in whatever way, and to sincerely not just mourn, because he died at a very advanced age, but also to ponder again what his basic message was, both to Catholics and to the world as a whole.
Well, one of those messages from the outset of his papacy 12 years ago was calling out the ills of unbridled capitalism, most notably with his Laudato Si encyclical of 2015, which climate activists hailed. This was at the time of the Paris Accords, Vivian Walt. And again, it's not just about migrants. It's also about, more broadly, the world that we live in.
And in that sense, I'm not sure I totally agree with what Joanne said. I mean, obviously, this is spiritually a very significant moment for, you know, believers. But it's almost impossible to separate it out from these kind of materialistic issues, which are so dominant at the moment politically. We have the world's biggest economy, basically, at this point, in the hands of, you know, multi-billionaires. And the Pope was very candid about this. He described it as a kind of modern-day tyranny, this kind of love of money, he said. He called it the dung of evil. And in that respect, I think it's almost going to be impossible to ignore those issues, even as this funeral goes on. I think one thing that's clear in this funeral is that this big void now. He was the kind of singular global voice on a lot of issues, and there's no one really to replace that, not at the moment.
John Paul II was a Cold Warrior. He's from Poland. That Pope outlived the Cold War. Of course, the climate emergency, the inequalities of capitalism, Pope Francis did not outlive that, Edouard Tétrault.
No. to quote him, who am I to judge? So who am I to judge? Who are we to judge the actions of a Pope? But probably there are three domains in which either he didn't have enough time, or the institution or external forces prevented him from pushing his agenda. But the three shortfalls, if there are, one, the place for women in the church. This will most likely be on top of the agenda of the next Pope. Two, how to deal with Islam. But we'll come back to that. But it has been a bit of a blind spot in his during his tenure, even though he tried to build bridges with Islam, but we haven't seen much fruit on that. And indeed, the third area where things remain to be done is on the unbridled capitalism, which he did denounce it. He did write, notably in Laudato Si, very strong argument in favor of New Balance, etc. But surprisingly enough, during his key trip to the US, which I took a part of in 2015, he was almost mute on the issue.
Why?
Probably either he felt that it was not the right moment, and probably also because there has been a sort of, I don't want to say blackmail of institutions against the Catholic Church in the US, but the deal was if you start to put us on the grill regarding the economy, we are going to put another spotlight on the difficult affairs in the Catholic Church.
The sex scandals, you know.
Yes, yeah. It was something of that kind. So it is still on the agenda of the future pope. There have been words, but John Paul II brought down the Berlin Wall. We were many to hope that Pope Francis would bring down Wall Street, the Wall of Wall Street, but something like that. It did not happen, and we see the fruits of that, as Vivienne said.
Edward Penton, this encyclical early in his papacy, it was part of this clash, as the way you just heard Edouard Tétrault describe it, between the Pope and a conservative U.S. Church. Hmm. Your thoughts on how that showdown has evolved in the time since?
Yes, I mean, that's one of the key elements, I think, of the pontificate that's certainly remembered in the United States, was his general dislike. His relations with the United States were cool at best, and that was largely because of his Latin American background. I think he thought that the conservative wing, at least in Latin America, tended to be allied with sort of fascist forces at times, and I think the traditional wing too. And so I think he took that with him, and I think it played a part in his perception of the United States, which I think many felt was regrettable, because I think they feel that he'd missed a lot of the good in the United States, especially with regarding the faith, and that many Americans, of course, are very strong in their faith, and faith is still very significant in the country, unlike in Europe, for example. And I think a lot of people felt that that sort of passed him by, unfortunately, and that he seemed to have that. He never seemed to quite lose that rather sort of prejudicial view of the United States, I think.
Joanne Pierce, there was a survey done last year by the Pew Institute, which showed that still, you had three quarters of the of U.S. Catholics who had a positive view of Pope Francis. So, was this encyclical, this attack on unbridled capitalism, the damage it was doing to humans and to the environment, was it targeting the United States?
Well, certainly, the United States has been the source of a great deal of environmental damage. And I think maybe not targeting so much as a single target, but addressing the big industrialized countries across the world who are willing to put making more money, more profit, much more profit than might have been the case, say, in the 19th or early 20th century, over protecting the environment, protecting the ecosystem. Remember, Pope Francis took the name Francis. He didn't take the name Ignatius. And as far as I know, there's never been a pope named Ignatius. But this Franciscan focus on poverty and embracing the beauty of creation, living with creation. Not that human beings don't have an impact, no matter what we do, on our environment, but our concern for the habitability, the safety, the pollution of the planet is really more in line, even with the Old Testament. Human beings are given dominion over the earth, but maybe we should be interpreting that more in terms of stewardship over the earth.
Right.
But again, this was also at a time when there was rising feeling about the not just the enormous present impact, but projecting the future impact if we went along the same lines.
Right. And the question that we've been asking here in the France 24 debate is whether Pope Francis's successor will pursue on that path. Now, Sima Gupta, the Lord moves in mysterious ways. So do papal conclaves. It's early days yet. What do we know? Because we've seen, our heads are dizzy by trying to memorize so many names of cardinals that could be in the running at this point.
Yes, and it's a lot of names. I mean, in total, you have 135 of them who will be participating in the conclave. Conclave, of course, stands for with a key, because that's when they're locked up in secrecy in the vote. 135 because they are the 135 that are under the age of 80. Now, it's important to note that 108 of them were actually appointed by Pope Francis. Right. So for them, this is going to be the very first conclave. It's going to be the very first time that they actually get together to choose who they are going to be. And for the first time, less than half of them are from Europe, because Pope Francis was very shrewd, if you like, for him, in terms of how he wanted to be the makeup of the College of Cardinals. They come from all parts of the world. There's an increase in the number of Asians as well as African cardinals. And so some of the names that are being brought about, you have Cardinal Pietro Parolin. Now, he's the Vatican number two, the Secretary of State. He very much the diplomat. Could he possibly actually take over the role? Although some say he who goes into a conclave as the most probable candidate generally comes out of the conclave back to being a cardinal. So we'll have to see whether that actually plays out. Then you've also got Cardinal Luis Tagle. He's from the Philippines. Could he be the first Asian pope? He's known to have a lot of pastoral experience, somebody who is close to Francis, considered a moderate. Then on the other side, you also have Cardinal Turkson from Ghana. Could he possibly be the first African pope? He was very much touted as a possibility in the last conclave, and yet again, his name has cropped up. He tends to lean more conservative. But then on the other hand, you have the Italian that was also mentioned by another person on the panel, Matteo Zuppi, someone who was appointed as the envoy by Pope Francis to Ukraine, someone seen as close to the community of Sant'Egidio, which is involved in helping the poor and also in conflict resolution. So those are just some of the names. But at the moment, really, it's anyone's guess, because of those new cardinals that were made cardinal, a lot of them are progressive. They're also conservative. And so we don't really know where it's going to stand when they actually get into the Sistine Chapel to vote.
All right. The late Pope would recoil at the thought that there's a crypto betting site called Polymarket that might be profiting from all this speculation. We could show you it's got Vatican Secretary of State Parolin that Sima was mentioning as favorite. But Seamus warns us that being the favorite's never a good idea, followed by Luis Antonio Tagle of the Philippines. And this is the odds in the last couple of days, by the way. Last day, in fact. Look at that. And the Archbishop of Bologna, Matteo Zuppi, followed by that Ghanaian prelate, Peter Turkson. Of course, every time there's a surprise, it seems, Edouard Tétron.
Yes, one name does not appear yet, but should be scrutinized. Because if you cross the idea that you want to put Europe back on the map and you want to engage Islam in an efficient way with someone who knows Islam day in and day out, and also there is the issue of age. Traditionally, the idea is to have an old enough pope, but the damage for the church and also
people didn't think Francis would win because they thought he was too old.
But you have the name of Pier Battista Pizzaballa, who is age 60, who is the Patriarch of Jerusalem. Italian, but has spent his last 25 years in Jerusalem, is someone who should be closely looked at. Should the agenda of the church be indeed what was discussed?
Vivian Wall.
You know, I think, as Seema says, it's almost impossible to tell what's going to happen once the Sistine Chapel is sealed off from the outside world, and we have no idea what the discussion will be inside. It seems to me that given the way that this goes, you've got 135 cardinals, you've got round after round of voting, it's feasible that you will finally end up with somebody who's basically the consensus candidate. Don't forget, Pope Francis was like nobody's choice at first. He was number 15 on the list of possibilities when the conclave began. And so none of these names that we've been speaking about might wind up as Pope.
So, Edward Penton, in your Panini cards of conclave cardinals, who have you got?
Right. Well, similar to the names the other guests have mentioned, I think, as Edward said, Cardinal Peter Balla, I think, is very much an interesting candidate because he's only 60, but he's very popular. He's a Franciscan. He offers a certain amount of continuity with Pope Francis, but also be able to bridge a lot of the divisions, which unfortunately did develop during Pope Francis' pontificate within the church. And I think he could be somebody to mend those. Just if I could plug something just briefly, because I did write this book called The Next Pope in 2020. Since then, we've updated that. And we've now produced a website containing all the cardinals and profiles of 42 of them, in-depth profiles of 42 of them. Now, we did this really to be of service to the cardinals so that they know who they're voting for when they're going into the conclave, so they can make an informed choice. So if viewers are interested, they can go to the website. It's called thecollegeofcardinalsreport.com, and you can see all the profiles of the cardinals and perhaps make up your own mind who you think could be ideal for the pontificate. It's the first of its kind, anyway.
Because, as we were discussing, so many of new cardinals, so many for whom, as Seema was saying, it'll be their first conclave, so many who don't know each other, we were saying on this set 24 hours ago that that's going to add, perhaps, to the uncertainty. Will there be attempts to pressure proceedings from the outside, Edward?
Well, yes, there usually are. It's not the sort of skullduggery you'd expect or that Hollywood tries to portray, but yes, it does go on. And of course, if they don't know each other and they don't have an idea of who they are and where they stand, it leaves them open to exploitation and to being lobbied for perhaps a candidate who isn't really suitable. So that's one of the reasons why we produce this site. It's a big effort. It's a lot of researchers involved in it. It's really aimed at helping them to make, as I say, an informed choice and not to be exploited and made to vote for somebody just because they may be politically of a certain side and being pushed because of that.
So, Joanne Pierce, which way is the wind blowing? Is it blowing towards a reformer or towards somebody who wants a return to tradition?
Well, there's one cardinal who actually has been nicknamed the Asian Francis, Louis Tagle. And I am wondering, just because so many of them are new and so many of them have been appointed by Pope Francis, I'm wondering whether at this point he might not be a serious choice. He will be very much following in the footsteps of Francis. But there are others who are more moderate to liberal as well. Something within me says it's really time for an East Asian pope. The Philippines is the most Catholic country in the Far East. And one wonders if we really carry through the global perspective that Francis acted very assertively about, whether that might not be where we would look to for the next pope.
And Seema Gupta, just to remind us before we go, the funeral on Saturday, when does that conclave begin?
Well, it all depends First and foremost, from the date of the funeral, there are 9 days of mourning. There will be services held every day in those 9 days. And only after that, there can be a potential date that we know. We are still waiting to hear from the Vatican on the specifics of a date. It could be anything up to 20 days. There were changes that Pope Francis actually made, or it could be even earlier. So the cardinals have to make that decision, but clearly all eyes on what that date is and when it's going to begin and how long it's going to take them eventually to come up with that decision before we actually have a habemus papam or we have a pope.
And we'll have to leave it there for now. Sima Gupta will be covering it throughout. Thank you so much for joining us there from St. Peter's Square. I want to thank Joanne Pierce for being with us from Worcester, Massachusetts, from Canterbury, England, Edward Penton, Edouard Tétrault, Vivian Walt. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.